From Albuquerque this week, I'm Joey Peters.
And I'm Matthew Reichbach.
And it's the Weekly Word, and we're here with two guests. One, we're welcoming back Sterling Fluharty, who's was a contributor to Santa Fe Reporter and a freelance journalist.
Second week in a row.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
And then we also have Andy Lyman. He's here. He was from the Mexico Broadcasters Association. He's an intern at KUNM and an independent journalist.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And we're going to do a recap of the 2013 legislative session, which right now seems to be shadowed by the last-minute final push of the omnibus tax bill that was pretty much done under wraps.
Yeah, we'll have Sterling explain to us every single component of what's in that bill.
And we'll explain the fishy way that it jumped through the legislature.
And we'll get to that and some reaction from some representatives right after this break.
So at the last minute of the 2013 legislative session, the House and Senate pushed through a controversial bill that could get up to $55 million, cost the state up to that much, in tax cuts.
And it was pushed through in a pretty, I've heard the word absurd a couple of times. I've heard the word shady a couple of times. Let's just say it's controversial.
We've even heard the word illegal, although we're not quite going to allege that, but it does seem like they broke some House rules.
It does seem like some fun stuff went through on this omnibus tax bill. Let's just give it a quick recap. It was the Breaking Bad bill came through out of the Senate. And
that's a bill that would change the film tax incentive to favor TV shows over movies just a little bit.
Yeah, that would give another 5% tax break for the TV shows rather than the movies. That came up in the Senate. They added this huge omnibus tax package that has four giant components to it. And with about half an hour left in the session, sent it over to the House. The House passed it with...
without a fiscal impact report, without a debate on this, from what I understand.
Yeah, and it got sent over to the House.
We had legislators who were concerned getting silenced from Nate Gentry passing a motion and Speaker Ken Martinez.
Yeah, and then, I mean, in fact, we had one of our guests, Andy Lyman. He spoke to a couple of the representatives about what happened at the end there, and he has a little report for us. So let's go ahead and go to that right now.
In the final 15 minutes of the 2013 New Mexico State Legislative Session, lawmakers rushed through a revised version of the Breaking Bad bill buried in a controversial tax bill. After a complicated chain of events resulted in the bill being sent back to the House floor for final approval, members of the House, including Speaker Ken Martinez, scrambled to make sense of the situation. The end result was approval of House Bill 641. Democratic Representative Bill McCamley of Las Cruces, one of the most vocally opposed to the bill, says even he had a hard time understanding what had happened.
I'm really frustrated that we have to resort to this kind of strategy in order to get something passed. It's tough for a couple reasons. Number one, it's tough for us to look forward and see what this really means. If I would have voted for it, I would have had to go back to my constituents and be able to explain it, and I was not able to do that. I didn't have a chance to look at what it actually meant. The second problem is the public doesn't really know what this is. Are there provisions in there that are good? Yeah, I think so. Obviously, I've been a supporter of the film tax credit. I have been a supporter of the combined reporting, but there's some real problems that I have with the regressivity of a corporate income tax decrease, and obviously this seems to be a deal that was struck at higher pay grades than mine. That being said, I think we all have to have a vote, and I'm just frustrated by it.
Democratic Representative Brian Egolf of Santa Fe says the last-minute scramble is just part of being in the roundhouse.
The hard deadline of noon on the 60th day has got its positives and its negatives. One of the negatives is things at the end tend to get rushed. On a bill like this tax package that we passed, there's things in there I absolutely don't like. There's things in there that I love. Each of the pieces had already been vetted. And so that helps the decision to be made, because you know there's not a surprise coming in at the last minute. I think that process for a brand new member, it's a sight to see right at the end. You need to do a job of reading it and making sure you know what you're voting on, but also there's 111 other legislators. And when a package comes out of the Senate with three dissenting votes, members like John Arthur Smith and Peter Wirth, the whole political spectrum supporting it, that sends a message that this is probably something that's good for the state.
While the Breaking Bad bill was vetoed by Governor Susana Martinez, she says she will sign this one and wants to send a message to the film industry that New Mexico is open for business. Reporting from the state capitol in Santa Fe, I'm Andy Lyman.
So to put a little perspective to this, a few days before they rammed through this omnibus bill, Governor Martinez had threatened to veto the budget that the House Democrats had passed.
The $5.9 billion budget that the House and Senate had passed, actually.
A veto threat, if she did veto that budget, would mean they would have to go into a special session later this year and find a way to pass a budget. This was done to basically avoid a special session and a potential government shutdown. Andy, can you tell us a little bit about what you saw during these last frantic moments and what some of the legislators told you?
Well, the first thing is I went straight to McCamley because it was pretty clear amongst some people that he was going to sit there and debate this for as long as he could to kind of kill it. And he never got that opportunity.
How did he not get that opportunity?
And Matt may be able to speak to this a little bit better, but basically the Republicans did their best to stop any debate.
Yeah, but basically what Nate Gentry stood up and did is he called the previous question, which with two-thirds of a vote, which we'll get into that in a little bit, two-thirds of a vote, you can basically cut off debate and then go straight to a vote on the bill. And that's what Nate Gentry did, and that did not please McCamley, who was, right before that, he was limbering up. He was like stretching, like, yeah, getting his Rockies stuff going, ready to filibuster the end of the session.
I looked over at Matt, and I even said, it looks like he should be doing this to the Rocky soundtrack, like he should be punching a big frozen side of beef or something. He was stretching, and he had a huge mug of coffee ready to go. And he actually looked a little bit optimistic right before all this stuff went down. And as the clock ticked away and that last second hit and they made the vote, he made a beeline out the door. And so I caught him right before he got in his car. And one thing that I didn't put in that piece was he said, 5 minutes after I stopped talking to you, I'm getting in my car and driving straight to Las Cruces. So he was done for the day. He was not happy. He was visibly upset. So
he's, you know, one legislator cut off from debating. But also you mentioned the clock ticking, and actually by law or by rules, at least, they were supposed to adjourn at 12 noon. Correct?
That's by law. That's in the Constitution, I believe, that it ends at noon. So that's not just a House rule that they might have done. That's a law they might have broke. You could ask Stephen Easley about him. He has his watch set to the atomic clock, and he said he saw it past noon.
Yeah, so what happened was the Speaker of the House, Ken Martinez, let noon pass and still let a vote happen after noon. He's been very criticized for this, and I want to just phrase something that Milan Simonich wrote. Perhaps Martinez's clock was broken, just like his values and his sense of good government. Sterling, you had something to say?
Yeah, just a quick observation. It's not like this happened with nobody mentioning it at the time. In fact, I understand that State Representative Mimi Stewart spoke out right in the midst of the debate and said, "Mr. Speaker, it is already noon." And he simply ignored her, proceeded with the vote.
He said, "The vote is now open." That was his response.
Okay.
And so then they voted on it, and as soon as the gavel came down, he said, "It's now noon," or that might not be the exact quote, but that's what he said.
And what, Matthew, you were referring to earlier, Representative Stephen Easley, he said his watch to atomic time, which is the most accurate time in the world, or something like that.
And yeah, it's set to the atomic clock. I think it's
and he's Boulder saying it definitely went over noon when they held this vote.
Yeah, I don't think that Easley would get that mad if we referred to him as a little bit of a science nerd. So he definitely thinks that he had the time right exactly on the exactly where it was supposed to be.
One other thing I'll just mention real quick that also called into question the procedures by which this happened was that they had a vote based on a motion from Representative Nate Gentry. And it was supposed to take two-thirds of the House saying, yes, we're okay with ending or not even going into the debate.
Cutting off debate, yeah.
Exactly. So they, according to the Speaker's instructions, had to get 46 votes. But there's at least one other instance, just the Sunday before, where the two-thirds vote in the House, in order to pass HCR1, which was the rule about legislative emails, two-thirds on that day was 47 votes, not the 46 votes on the last day of the session. So an interesting discrepancy there.
Yeah, and that issue here is whether it's two-thirds of the chamber or two-thirds of those in attendance.
So I got to ask, who wasn't there at this point? What kind of a legislator is not there in the most important bill of the session?
Well, if we could find the vote on concurrence, we would be able to tell you, but which is not online.
Yeah, unfortunately, they don't post that.
We could tell you who took a walk, as they say. But yeah, we don't really know right now who wasn't there to vote on this important, very important bill. And there was actually, if I recall correctly, it was 46-18 that the motion passed, the motion to proceed, or the motion to call the previous question. And but then the final vote was 46-16, so two people left after.
They just threw their hands up. I'm not going to deal with this.
Or maybe the button was broken, since we've seen that a couple of times. But that's all of the background, the kind of inside baseball stuff. But let's kind of try to get into what's in this bill.
Yeah, because it, like we said earlier, might cost up to $55 million for the taxpayers over the next couple of years. Is that?
Yeah, Joey. So you're actually getting that figure from a fiscal impact report that
which they did not have at the time of voting.
It only appeared on the legislative website earlier today, days after the vote actually happened.
So I just wanted to add that I believe that Mimi Stewart, Representative Mimi Stewart, was quoted as they got a verbal fiscal impact report. That's she was unhappy about that, and I think it was Representative Mo Maestas had his expert witness. I don't know if he was the one that did the fiscal impact report.
He was with LCS, Legislative Council Service. He drafts the bills.
So technically, the supporters of this happening said, yes, there was a verbal fiscal impact report because the clock was ticking. But it is also to note, it's interesting that it was just released today. So
how many days later?
Yeah, it's half a week, in case you couldn't hear Joey because he's off mic. Yeah, it's about half a week later because we're recording this on Wednesday. It ended on Saturday. It took them that long. We'll give them Sunday off. So it took them 3 days to come up with this fiscal impact report on a bill that they voted on. They passed both chambers in less than an hour.
Yeah, so this was quite some bill to behold. It was something like three dozen pages. And you've already heard that it contained multiple parts. So
let's 35 just pages, yeah.
Break it down real quick. What did this do to the tax code? So probably the biggest or the most high-profile issue was the cutting of the corporate income tax rate here in New Mexico. Now, it turns out that New Mexico, for the region, had a relatively high rate. And so one of the goals of the governor was to bring it down in line with what, say, Arizona had.
4.6%, I believe, or 4.9% is what she wanted.
Right. So now I don't know if it actually went down all that way. I think it only went part of the way down.
It was phased in to 5.9% was what this bill did. And then the other big the big thing to help corporations or corporate giveaway, depending on which side of the side you're on, is a single sales factor, which basically gives big corporations like Intel a huge advantage.
Right. And so a single sales factor applies to manufacturing organizations like Intel, who produces chips for computers. But if you're not manufacturing, then there's this thing called combined reporting. So the big box stores like Walmart, they now have to pay their fair share of taxes, whereas in the past, because of the the holes in the tax code, they could largely get away with not having to pay their taxes to the state of New Mexico.
Yeah, but basically the combined reporting is if you have a corporation that has something in, say, Delaware, which has no corporate income tax, you could pay your taxes on sales made in New Mexico in Delaware, so you're not paying any taxes. So that's what companies like Walmart and that sort of thing, they do. This forces them to pay income taxes on all sales made in New Mexico.
So this was a bill that Senator Peter Wirth has had for a decade now or something?
Since he was in the House. Yeah,
nine years, 10 years maybe. But I understand that what's in this omnibus bill is a significant concession from what, you know, was originally in Peter Wirth's bill. Can you talk about that, Sterling?
My understanding from listening to Senator Wirth describe this before the session started was that combined reporting is something that should apply across the board to all corporations, to all big box stores in New Mexico. I heard him say when he gave presentations before the session started that he was already in conversation with the administration, and I think that they must have struck a deal over the course of the session that allowed him to give up a little bit of what he was asking for in combined reporting, and then also the governor not getting exactly what she wanted as far as lowering the corporate income tax rate.
Yeah, and the combined reporting bill, last year was the first time it had ever even cleared one chamber, and that was because they made it last year only apply to big box stores, but then Martinez vetoed it. So it ended up passing both chambers, and it got vetoed. So I want to point that out. But let's go back on the omnibus bill. We have to touch on the Breaking Bad bill that was in there that we mentioned before. That's in there, but that's probably the smallest the tiniest portion of the bill.
Right. So it turns out that the producers or those individuals who make television shows in New Mexico can now get 30% of their costs reimbursed rather than 25%. And there's also, I think, like $10 million out of the $50 million available annually that can roll over to the following year.
If it's unused, yeah. And Andy, I don't know if you were following that, the Breaking Bad bill about its saga, about getting vetoed. Did you ever speak to Mo Maestas about that bill?
I don't think I covered much of the Breaking Bad bill. I did not speak to Mo Maestas. I'm trying to think if I had a conversation with anybody. I watched it from the press gallery kind of go back and forth, and I know the governor definitely was not supportive of the original bill, but it seemed to me that it wasn't so much what was in it, but what she didn't get from other bills.
Yeah, it was more something that she was using to hold hostage to get something like the corporate tax cuts passed that she wanted.
Yeah, it was a bargaining. I wrote it on Twitter. I said, you know, Breaking Bad bills back, because what happened is they passed both chambers pretty without much.
Very bipartisan.
Yeah, very bipartisan without much debate. But then it went up to Martinez's desk, and she had 3 days to decide on it, and she vetoed it because she didn't have what she wanted on the corporate income tax and other portions. So then Mo Maestas brought it back with a dummy bill, which we won't worry with those details, but he brought it back, and then eventually, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, it kind of became the conduit for this huge omnibus tax
basically
bill.
Basically, they put this big omnibus tax bill as an amendment to it, right?
Yeah.
And is that legal?
Yeah. It there's questions if there's log rolling, which is called, you know, putting multiple things in one bill that are unrelated, but then proponents can just say, hey, these are all related to taxes. So it's just an omnibus tax bill, so it's fine. There's some people making noises about log rolling, but I don't think that would go very far in court to overturn this bill.
And I think it should be stressed, you were touching at earlier, the original Breaking Bad bill in its original form, it didn't do anything to really change how much money he's getting paid, you know, to support the films, right?
The change would be $10 million because that was the rollover is capped at $10 million. So 1 year there could be the cap could be $50 million if people only use, let's say, $38 million that year. They only pay out $38 million. That means the next year $10 million if it rolls over. So then that year there will be another $10 million higher hit than was previously budgeted for, which is something John Arthur Smith didn't like. He voted against the bill, but $10 million out of a $5.9 billion budget, that's That's pretty small potatoes, and that's, I mean, that's probably a very rare occurrence that they'd then use the entire $60 billion the next year.
I think it's also worth mentioning that there was some concern, particularly noted on Twitter, just as this bill was hitting the floor in the final minutes of the session, that cities and counties were going to be disproportionately affected, that there might be some unintended consequences for those local governments if, in fact, there were these broad sweeping changes made to the tax code.
And the change that we're talking about is the hold harmless provision, which basically with the food – so let's get into some history here. When the food tax was eliminated under Richardson's administration, I think – well, when the food tax was eliminated anyway, a third of that food tax or something around there went to cities. So then all of a sudden when the food tax is eliminated, all these cities had this big hole in their budget. So what the state did is they held them harmless, which means for what they would have had from the food tax, they paid them back. So basically the state is paying them for getting rid of the food tax. They got rid of they're phasing out the hold harmless over, I think it's 17 years. The first 2 years there's no change, and then for 15 years, they just cut a little bit away, a little bit away, a little bit away. And that's been something that John Arthur Smith has wanted since Hold Harmless started. So that's just the history there. That's where, you know, cities and counties, they're going to be hit kind of like this slow roll. Every year they have a little bit more taken out of their budget.
Now, to be fair, the fiscal impact report does say that there's some uncertainty about forecasting this far into the future. And the bill actually does allow local governments to impose their own gross receipts tax on top of whatever the state requires. So in other words, cities and counties can recoup some of the money they might start losing in 2 years, but they have to raise the rates on their own local citizens, which is a perilous position to be in.
So basically what people are saying is, the argument against that is, you're forcing cities and counties to raise taxes because they have this hole in their budget that needs to be filled. So that was the hold harmless. And, I mean, we're just going through all these changes, and that shows how complicated this bill is. Our podcast is a lot longer than the debate on that bill, on the bill was in the in the House. It's not – I think we're a little bit less than 20 minutes in now, and there was no debate on the House floor. And that's the thing that – That's the main thing that people are saying. Is like, we're talking about this FIR. There was no FIR on the floor. I mean, Andy, you were there and you saw them trying to explain the bill. Can you just describe that a little bit? Because it's kind of humorous if it wasn't deciding so much money.
So it was a lot of chaos. Just a little background. Sitting up in the press gallery, it seemed like it was supposed to be a pretty quiet day or pretty quiet afternoon in the House. All of a sudden, everyone rushed over because everyone that was watching this bill on the Senate side knew it was coming straight over to the House. And immediately, people were – it was almost like running to their posts. You've got Nate Gentry, the minority whip. He was grabbing books and any kind of rules he could find on how he could handle this. And then you've got Mo Maestas. He's scrambling to get an expert witness on the floor. And then you've got people asking – about the fiscal impact report, and like Matt had mentioned earlier, right at the end when Representative Mimi Stewart said, "Mr. Speaker, it's 12 o'clock," he didn't even answer her. He just said, "Vote's open," and the gavel hit. I mean, there was a rush in the last 15 minutes, and then it was a minute and a half where it was decided, and that was it.
I think this tweet from Amanjar kind of explains it.
Amanda Manjares, I believe, from the Center for Civic Policy.
She says, Rep. Mo Maestas doesn't understand the bill he's carrying. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that was part of the story fire that I did about the tweets at the end of the session. But Mo Maestas was speaking, or he was talking to somebody from LCS about the bill. He was like, "Can you explain what's in this bill?" And the guy was so nervous. Like, he did not want to be there because LCS, they can't advocate for one side or the other
One thing I mentioned to Matt while that was happening is I looked over at him and I compared him to like the kicker of a football team in the last, you know, 2 seconds of the Super Bowl where he, you know, he had to win this for him, and all the pressure was on this poor guy that probably never thought he'd be speaking like that.
Yeah, then I said it was like if they made that kicker be the quarterback, because that's essentially what it was. He was trying to explain this complicated bill that we're struggling to explain 4 days later. Well,
and just to be fair to LCS, we've already mentioned how they draft the bills, but it's actually the LFC, the Legislative Finance Committee, who does the fiscal impact reports. So sort of asking an LCS guy to crunch the numbers on the spot?
He wasn't doing the FIR. He was just describing the bill, which was he was having trouble doing. So it's a 35-page bill that was slammed together.
And the whole time, I wasn't there, but I was reading that Mo Maestas was using words like "I believe," "I think."
I think this is in here, and I'm like, "No, the food tax." He's like, "I believe the food tax isn't in this bill." It's like, well, they said on the other side, you know, Senator Munoz, George Munoz, who carried the amendment that was really just the conduit for Jonathan Smith to come and make all these changes. He did say there was no food tax involved, which I'm sure Think New Mexico, the think tank that hates the food tax, I'm sure that they had part of that. But it was just interesting to see nobody knew what was in this bill. That's the part that I want to reiterate over and over. Nobody knew what was in this bill.
Yeah. Nobody knew. How can you vote for something that you don't know what's in there?
That's the question. And as one of the reporters said up there, they really don't like special sessions. They did not want to go to a special session. If this bill didn't pass, we'd be planning on a special session at some point.
So, Joey, you touched on one of the things about how do you vote, and so what Representative Egolf had kind of mentioned to me was, in his take on things, well, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but what his take is you should trust some of these senior representatives or senior senators more than and just kind of assume that it's good for that. Where McCamley was coming from is, he may have read it. I don't know if he read it or not. He didn't say, but he definitely was not happy with it, and he was ready to fight it. And Egolf, he kind of gave me the impression that he's like, I read it. I skimmed through it. It's been read as its other incarnations before. It's been vetted, and we should just go for it because it's good for the state. So it's kind of interesting that I think that's the defense on why they did it, because they just needed to get it through.
So in the end, how did the Democrats, the Democratic leadership, come out looking good from doing this?
If you read that column that you referred to by Milan Semenic, I believe that's how you say his name. Milan, right? Ken Martinez, Kenny the Dealmaker, I think that's what he called the column. He did not come out looking good at this, because as we're describing, the chaos that happened at the end, and a lot of people were saying, "Why, if this is such an important bill, why can't you just have an FIR drafted and come back for a special session if this is so important?" I mean, a special session costs $50,000 a day, but as we're finding out, this could end up costing $55 million in 5 years.
Plus, these budgetary special sessions have happened before, and from what I'm hearing, they usually last a couple days at most.
Well, it sounds like they had a deal on this already. Obviously, they just made the deal so late that they couldn't actually fully see it through the whole process through. So they just don't. They had this deal, but they didn't know what it did, basically, what it would do.
And how does Governor Martinez come out looking from this? Is this corporate tax break might be one of her biggest accomplishments yet?
It's probably her biggest. This tax package was her biggest accomplishment so far.
I know that she'll be using this in the reelection campaigns, and you know, whenever she's out on the national platform talking about her accomplishments in New Mexico, she's lowered the corporate income tax
bipartisan fashion
to get us like Arizona and Texas. In Colorado. Well,
not like Texas. We'll never be down that like Texas. She came out looking the best out of this of anybody, because even though her fingers were all over it, you know, Jonathan Smith was up there speaking. There was a great story by in the Santa Fe New Mexican about how this all came about, which I recommend everybody read. We'll link to it in the post. But Jonathan Smith basically championed this. He brought it through. but it took Martinez getting the Republicans in line to get this actually across the finish line. So Martinez ends up looking like the great victor here, for better or worse. We're less than 2 years away from a election, and she's, like Joey said, she's going to use it.
Have you one question I have, Sterling? Have you in the fiscal impact report, has it said anything about how much business this is supposed to bring to the state?
So I only gave it a glance. I haven't gone through the whole report, but I can tell you that that's certainly one of the great promises that Governor Susana Martinez is saying will come out of this tax reform. She believes corporations, companies, businesses will relocate to New Mexico because of a more conducive tax environment. I think it's fair to say that this will be one of the big campaign issues 2 years from now when she runs again for re-election. Has her plan actually created jobs? Whereas for the last 2 years, job growth has been zero in the state. So,
regressed. Yeah, it's regressed.
So this is either the big game changer for her, or if, as some of her critics say, it only further hurts the state. So it's a major turning point in her administration, I would say.
Now, you've looked into the corporate tax, into this, you know, the effectiveness of this. What can you say, though, about how promising this is?
So I would just say, first off, that companies that choose to relocate never make their decision based on a single factor. So just because the corporate tax rate is down does not necessarily mean that there are a whole bunch of companies that was the last straw and now they're going to move to New Mexico. But with that said, I think that New Mexico is taking a harder look at things like the tax credits, tax deductions, and in fact, there were a couple tweaks in this particular bill in those areas. And I think that the governor is trying to also work on education. So there are a number of pieces in place, and we haven't even mentioned Spaceport here, but that's something that's gone to the governor now. So there's arguably a few different ways in which the governor is trying to make New Mexico a place that is open for business, but it remains to be seen if it works.
Yeah, and I think the big part of that is trying to make a good quality of life. Not saying that these policies would do that, but obviously having good education in your state would be a big factor in a corporation relocating.
I have a feeling these are debates that if there was a debate on the House floor or the Senate floor, we would have heard. But none of us are legislators. None of us. yeah, good thing Andrew says. I think that the takeaway from the end of the session is we probably still don't know what really is going to happen. They definitely didn't know on Saturday what the projections were. And the way it was pushed through was just did not make anybody look good in the legislature. And I know that we wanted to talk about real quick the gun control bill, the background check bill dying in the Senate. But I think that we've talked a little bit too long on this, which is I guess the people who are hoping for debate on the bill, you can listen to this instead and pretend this is it.
Well, I think it's like I said at the beginning, I think that this legislative session is going to be defined by this last hour.
Yeah, that there was tax bill. People were talking about how it was kind of a boring session. Nothing really happened. And how
all of the governor's, how all of her big bills from before, like repealing driver's license, holding third graders who can't read back, weren't going anywhere.
They didn't go anywhere. But then every single piece of action in the legislature, it seemed, was jammed into the last in the last 45 minutes. And I think that so we don't go 45 minutes here. I think that we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. thank you for coming in and talking to us for that little report, Andy.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
He's an independent journalist. He's freelancing. He's an intern at KUNM, so hire him, people.
Same with Sterling Fluharty is a freelancer now, and he's open for business just like New Mexico, apparently.
Thanks again, guys. It's always a pleasure to be with you here.
And I'm Matthew Reichbach. I write nmtelegram.com, and you can see that you can see the weekly word, or the morning word, every morning at there and at the Santa Fe Reporter's website.
And I'm Joey Peters with the Santa Fe Reporter, and we'll be back.